Well, thank you. We're going to do some singing of some Epiphany hymns. And yesterday when we did this, there were some who were saying that some of you didn't know in our ELW, which is this wonderful resource that it's going to take a while for us to follow the steps, I think. We're going to start off with a hymn and series. Well, you don't have to help us on this one. Just give us the pitch. But it is number 446. And one of the big elements in Epiphany is the baptism of Jesus. And this is a wonderful song that really can be used as a call and response. And I've used this in the remembrance of baptism, where we have that back and forth of the prayer. Do you know what I'm talking about? The beginning, the remembrance of baptism?
That's at the together with the confession that either
yeah,
or.
Yeah,
right?
let's look at that. Let's look at the, it is on page 97, Thanksgiving for Baptism. And this is a wonderful thing to use, you know, instead of a confession, at the beginning of a service, and we stand by the font, everyone turns to the font wherever it is, and we have these paragraphs. And what I do is I usually have it antiphonally between leader and congregation. And sometimes I've inserted this song in between the reading of the text. And then you can have the asparagus, you know, the water, and get everybody wet. And then you make the DLWs wet, and then people see the crinkling, and they think, oh, it's wet, and they think of water, and it's all good stuff. But this is a wonderful antiphonal song, easy to sing, easy to learn. Do any of you know this? I'm going on a journey. 446? Okay, 446. And I'll sing the first part, and you just follow me, okay? Let's try it out. Okay. I'm going on a journey.
I'm going on a journey.
And I'm starting today.
And I'm starting today.
So that's why you looked at me, the remembrance of baptism, the Thanksgiving of baptism. It's lovely. It's lovely, that language. There's ways to include young voices and old voices. There's ways to do it from different parts of the congregation, interspersed music. You know, and there's other baptismal hymns you can intersperse. But it's just a lovely grounding.
Mm-hmm. And the whole idea of antiphonal singing, or the back and forth.
Yeah.
That's a that seems to come out of here. It certainly is not something that comes easily, though, yet to have been figured out things with our brain and with our voice. It isn't a practice that's used, and I believe it's very important.
Right. And it's very traditional. I mean, if we go back to the psalmody and all that, it's way, way old. And Bill can teach us about that in the Haitian music, this call and response.
Yeah.
All you have to do is have good ears and listen to me and follow me, and you got it down, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you got it down easy.
You've got to have a pastor who can sing.
Mm-hmm.
You
can have members
who can sing. You can have a cantor.
Yeah. Anybody can carry it.
You can have anybody. Right. One more hymn before we even talk about Epiphany. I want us to say this is absolutely my favorite hymn. It's one of them here. Oh, I have many. This is note 453. Just a lovely hymn. Baptized and Set Free. Any of you know this? This is the text. Yeah, let's try it out. See what you think. We even understand, we even get. Is it in our lexicon? hey, how's your epiphany going?
No, it's not outward.
No,
but you have an epiphany.
Yeah,
an
insight.
Insight.
Yeah.
Okay. Insight. Okay, what else comes to mind? When we think of the word, the season, you know, feelings, experiences, memories, or maybe you have none. Maybe it's just gone over your head. I don't know.
Well, you've already done one baptism.
Yep, yep.
Beginning.
Beginning. Yep.
Light.
Uh-huh. Had to be, yeah, Tiffany, I see the light. Light goes on.
The wise man.
Wise, yep. It was a great wise man.
And I also thought, we do a lot to the nations, you know, a lot about the world, or
yes,
the nations.
The world, yes.
Who the wise men are.
Yeah, all nations, right. Absolutely. Yeah. What does the word mean, do you know? Epiphany, what it means?
God. You see God.
Okay. Uh-huh.
God with us.
The word actually means manifestation, mm-hmm. to make manifest, you know, to make known. To make known. So, wow, interesting. How do we make the revelation of Jesus Christ known to all nations? That's what Epiphany is about. To make known. So, what does it mean to make something known? Through word, through sacraments, through tangible, through song, you know, what are the elements, okay? Epiphany gets lost. Epiphany is this funny season that's like an accordion, right? It all depends on when Easter falls. So, poor Epiphany, you know. Last year, it was a gazillion weeks. It was 7 weeks. So, it just kept going and going and going. Sometimes it's four. You know, it's very short. So it's kind of, you know, it's the movable season that has to adjust.
And I think sometimes I'm listening and it does mean, in our tradition, making known to the world, but sometimes I think it also, for me, is a challenge to for Jesus to make himself known to me through the rest of the world, not just the one I've grown
yes.
up in and
yes.
learned the catechisms in, but
right.
looking beyond ourselves
absolutely.
And seeing God's
yes.
presence and God's voice and
yes.
God's...
Absolutely. It's a season of signs. So what are the signs? Where are the signs of God being revealed to us in the
mm-hmm.
world? You know, what's being called... What are we being, where are we being called out? Who are we being called out to? Who's being called out to us? So it's not just, right, a one-way
thing. You
have
right there, you have from Japan, from
yes.
the remains of a...
Yes. Right.
Or moments of great love and terrible tragedy,
yes.
like the tornado, and then
yes.
the stories. The newsmen love to even give it,
right.
where they tell of some wonderful
right.
event, and we can see God in action. The newsman maybe doesn't.
Right, exactly, yes, yes. So we have, and in the whole Epiphany season, we have Jesus, we start off with Epiphany, the Festival of Epiphany. Do any of you celebrate that in your congregations?
You mean on the Thursday itself?
Yes, yes, on the Thursday itself.
Mm-hmm.
In Racine, we had a huge garden or a big spot outside, yard outside, and we would burn the Christmas trees.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have this huge bonfire. We would have 60 trees. Everyone would load up their trees, being
home.
Oh, and it was
from home,
people,
you mean they brought them?
Yeah, they brought them home, so they kept them. It was, and the Boy Scouts. We had the Boy Scouts, so I think they got their little things, you know, for protection, fire protection. And we'd have a potluck, and we'd have an Epiphany service outside with this light. And then, of course, it's conspicuous, so people are driving by on 4 Mile Road and they're seeing. They're going, "Oh, what's going? You know, what's going on there?" It's a great way to say. But few churches celebrate. Festival of Epiphany.
Our church takes all the young kids and they do a walk to the Magi and they go around the neighborhood and meet kings and
okay.
people who
shepherds
are assigned those spots.
Yeah.
So we've got the season, we've got the Festival of Epiphany, we have then the baptism of Jesus, we have then the changing of water into wine, we have Jesus going down to the seashore and calling forth these stinky, smelly fisher people, calling them forth. We have the Sermon on the Mount. Those are some of the texts. And then we have The end of Epiphany is what? What's the very last Sunday? Transfiguration Sunday. So we end with this. We start in the we start with the light, the Magi, the baptism. We end with this glory on the mountain, but we don't see on the mountain. We go down the mountain into the valley, and then it's wet. Okay, so that's sort of the arc of Epiphany, which is just. We also in the Old Testament we have the calling of Samuel. We have Jonah and the whale. God, there's a lot of water in Epiphany. And I was just at the water session with some of you, and I'm thinking about water. I think about baptismal font. Do people know where the water comes from in our churches? Do they know the source of water? That would be a whole children's sermon or a sermon or something to say. Like our font, it comes from the faucet, which comes from the Mississippi River. You know, how do we ground ourselves in our geography? I mean, contextualize even the water. Where does your water come from? Let's trace it. Let's do a journey of where the water comes from. And how's that water doing? How are we caring for that water? But water is a really strong. And then that idea of being sent out, we're sent out in mission. I want to read a couple quotes. This woman, she's Episcopalian, I believe. Things seen and unseen. She writes a little bit about Epiphany. Epiphany, the season of the weird. It starts on January 6th, 12 days after Christmas, when the Magi, three foreign kings, or astronomers, or both, arrive at Jesus' cradle bearing an odd assortment of gifts. Gold for a king, frankincense and incense, and myrrh, the fragrant ointment used to anoint the dead. Two more stories are told in Epiphany, John's baptism of Jesus at the River Jordan and the miracle at the wedding in Cana. The Magi follow a new star, a dove descends, water turns into wine. In each of the stories, the singularity of Jesus is revealed as if it were rising to the surface from under water. Events bring into focus what has been at the periphery. I see Jesus, his own dawning sense of what God has in store for him. We see Jesus claiming his authority that was given to him at baptism. You are my beloved son, of you I am well pleased. He goes out, it's the beginning of his ministry, claiming his authority as he heals, as he casts out demons and draws in the outcasts. And she continues, I see in Jesus his own dawning sense of what God has in store for him and for him alone. If it is true for Jesus, I realize in this season, then it is true for me. So Jesus' authority, how about the authority we've been given? And how can that rise out of the water in us as we are to be a light? There's a Catholic sister who talks about the Word of God, you know, became flesh. Not so that we could just have more words, but the Word of God became flesh so that we could become each a word. The Word of God in flesh in each one of us. Each of you is a word. Each of you is a story. Each of you tells a story. Each of you lives a story. Each of us is God's Word sent out. And she says, sometimes I think that faith is only about increasing peripheral vision, peripheral hearing. I believe in the incarnation. I want to believe that God intervenes. Maybe that's another way to talk about Epiphany, is God intervenes and changes water into wine and shows up. God shows up. So let's sing another hymn, and I would guess you don't know this one either. It's a little harder to sing, but it's really quite lovely. It gets at some of these themes of Epiphany, and it's 307. Come, Beloved of the Maker.
Come, Beloved of the Maker.
trying to stretch us, but we don't know. But do you hear all the images going around in that? Ooh. And again, I said yesterday, if a hymn is difficult, there's no reason you can't read it antiphonally like a psalm, you know, and maybe the music is played underneath. There's all kinds of ways to introduce. But if you did look at this like a concordance and look for every word that had to do with light, every hymn that had to do with, wouldn't that be fun to get the kids to go through the hymnal, find every hymn that has to do with light? Let's see if we can sing them all.
Mm-hmm. You know. One of the things that you remind me of other things in our worship that mean a great deal to me. One of them is that the people, the women, mostly women, but anyone could do this, make our banners. And so as the season changes, the meaning of the season is visual.
Yes.
And there are often, and one of my favorite ones is now, it's great creators still creating. Show us what we yet may be.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the banner is there, and the words are there, and the season is spoken.
Yes.
This combination.
Yeah. Yeah. How do we in our worshiping lives say this is a new day? This is Epiphany. Mm-hmm. And how can we say, draw attention to it? Like, shake us up. Okay, we've gone through Christmas. We talked about that yesterday. You know, the 3 weeks of Christmas. Now it's a new day. And we need help. We're fickle. We don't remember. Oh yeah, Epiphany. What does that mean? I mean, we need help. We need like the banner and the light and the reminders, right? We need that in all kinds of ways. We need it visually. We need it musically. We need it in word, because we all receive things differently.
It's not kind of like following the star of the show, though. You're coming after Christmas. And you're following up with this. So how do you get excitement for that?
That's right. And a season that's... Exactly. We're going to talk about that a little bit next. I just want to read Howard Thurman, African-American pastor who was at Riverside many years ago, writes this little piece about Epiphany. When the song of the angels is still, when the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and princes are home, when the shepherds are back with their flocks, the work of Christmas begins. To find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among the people, to make music in the heart. That's the work of Epiphany.
When our son was a student at Earlham College, the president and his wife sent a message to all the parents, well, probably alumni. Those words.
These words?
Yes, exactly.
This could be your call to worship every Sunday at Epiphany to remind. This is the mission statement, in a way, for Epiphany.
Which brings me, I don't want to be too intrusive here, but I am so respectful. Music means so much to many of us. And the When our son was at Earlham, he spent 4 years there, and we would go to see him on weekends sometimes. We didn't have a lot of opportunities to do that, but we'd go to worship. Because one of the things I'm respectful of and would like to grow from is the quiet, is the meditation, the worship kind of experience that you have in your inheritance, in your heritage. And I don't know how you would say, we've talked a lot about words.
Well, I'm just here listening, you know, and getting a perspective on liturgical approach to worship. But in my life, I've come to realize that there is a liturgy that underlies all being. And this, in a Quaker meeting, which is a non-program meeting and thus has no overt liturgy, sometimes expresses itself in funny things. But that's why I'm just here to observe.
Are you part of a regular...
Oh, I'm part of a worshiping congregation in Portland, Oregon.
Okay, so you're not always with the Quakers.
Always with the Quakers. That's a worshiping congregation to me.
You know, the reason I ask is our little Presbyterian church has a Quaker couple with us all for all these years.
Right.
But because there's nothing close, so they chose. So that's the circumstance, what your situation was.
Well, we have a lively meeting. Mm-hmm. But we don't do a lot of singing.
Yes.
It's actually one of the things which I feel is calls to me to try to improve, but my efforts have been, I won't say thwarted. I would just say they haven't always come to wonderful fruition as much as I wish they had.
So what does worship, what do you do?
Friends worship is silent, gathers in silence, and friends believe that in I would call leadership of the Spirit of God. But however, friends theologically range from essentially being like Christians to being agnostics or atheists. And so some friends will not call it the Spirit of God, but perhaps would call it the Spirit of the congregation. And I'm trying to keep it simple.
And when you feel called, you will stand up and speak. And share, right. Yeah, my husband, Dan, who's also here, was a year at Pendle Hill.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, he's a Lutheran Quaker at heart. Yeah. We talked in Advent about silence, and not just to nod to silence, but really significant silence. How do we do that? And that's really important. Yeah. Every vibrant, healthy worship, there are different elements that are necessary, and one of them is a sense of awe. And that's partly, and then a deep sense of listening, and how can we always listen if we don't stop enough? But that's a challenge for us Lutherans.
Thus the ministry arises from the congregation. Mm-hmm. And
so as we did yesterday, we're looking at places of tension. Remember, with Advent, people are busy and they're buying, and Advent says, wait, prepare, stop, and the world is saying, forget it, you know, let's buy, 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 let's be anxious enough. So we're going to do the same thing. What is happening culturally during the season of Epiphany? What's happening in the world? Like,
see,
what are some
Christmas
dynamics?
Presents back if they buy it, they don't want anymore.
Yeah. What's that?
They're taking the Christmas presents back.
They're disappointed. Yeah, returning.
It's a fairly dreary time of year.
It's a quiet time.
It's a quiet
January. It's quiet.
Yeah, it's quiet.
Super Bowl's coming.
Super Bowl.
With Martin Luther King holiday.
Yeah? In Minnesota, it's dark. People who have disorder or light, it's really getting tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a long haul they're dreading. This is a dreaded time for some.
Right, because Christmas has kind of helped them through.
Yeah.
Now that's over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or they're recovering from what was really painful, right? Mm-hmm. What else is going on?
Cold winters in Minnesota. Cold winters, that's the coldest.
Cold. And then in Minnesota, we have snowbirds. Mm-hmm. They're gone. A healthy chunk of many congregations are gone. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a weird thing. The congregation sort of changes. And then in Florida and Arizona, they're bulking up.
Mm-hmm. And what goes with that is for many people, they're kind of get cabin fever because they're kind of homebound, especially the older people. They don't get out as much. So that really adds stress.
Yeah. And maybe they can't get to things because it's cold and dark. They can't go out at night. I mean, all of this plays into how we think of how we are together in worship. What's happening in the congregation? What are some of the markers in a congregation?
Annual meetings.
Oh, yeah, the budget.
The budget.
Yeah,
annual meeting.
The best time of the year.
Budget, right. I mean, that comes right after Jesus is baptized. And we're on to the budget. Anything else? I mean, it's just kind of steady, maybe? Programs are in place? Quiet? Okay.
Getting ready for Lent.
Pardon?
Getting ready for Lent.
Yeah.
Leadership kind of thing.
Yeah,
talking about it.
One of the things I noticed, and this seems kind of strange, is that a lot of times the annual meeting is prefaced with or posted with a potluck, so you've got everybody kind of there. It kind of breaks the ice in January too, where you've got a community get together type thing.
You know, and you're bringing up that Lent is coming in a way. So pastors are busy freaking out about Lent and what's the theme and what are we going to do and how are we going to pull off and how to find volunteers. So Epiphany can get lost. We can get, because we're tired after Christmas, and here's this little window, so we're busy working, and Epiphany can get really lost. We don't spend, you know, to be really intentional to do what your pastor does, write out confessions and really be thoughtful. something to kind of think about as we pace ourselves. First Lent. By the way, I know a pastor's already planned Lent for next year.
Yeah.
Not me. Okay. So that's just sort of the contextual things of what's happening around us, right? Now we have, in the global scene, we have the continuation of war, soldiers being gone, right? The economy maybe being, who knows what's going to happen. People looking for work, and then the stuff that keeps happening in people's lives. But as you look at that, you know, light is needed, isn't it? And maybe to be drawn outside of ourselves. Sometimes when people are depressed, they say, sometimes it's really do something for somebody else. But we have this mission to be sent out and move beyond ourselves. So we're going to sing another hymn, Drawn to the Light. This is a John Yildesacker hymn. Remember John Yildesacker, our folk singer? And it is hymn 593, Drawn to the Light. By the time you're done with this, you're going to want to buy this and bring it home,
sure,
personally.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, can I just say, I talked to Gary's wife today. Why don't you tell them what they do, what she does with this hymnal, with the children?
Oh, my wife's on the staff at Singing from Public Lutheran. And in fairness, I work with Augsburg Fortress. So just in fairness, truth in the advertising.
Yeah.
For third grade, the church, what they do is they give third graders a Bible as they start the class, and they have mentors that stay with them, and this year it was prayer mentor. But at the end of the third grade, they all get an ELW hymnal that's engraved with their name on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the children's musician, she goes through marking up what hymns have been sung. So it's just not handed to the children. So you know some of the hymns that are in here. So, and then I can't remember, there was something else.
Oh, and the mentors.
And then the mentors put a little, like a little yellow tag or post-it note, say their favorite hymns as well, too. So they're mentors that go through. So it kind of passes on down. And it's the mentors that actually buy the hymnals. So it's not the church. It's not the church budget. So by the time they do it, it's $30 for a hymnal and an imprinted name on it. It's a $30 investment. In a child who, you know, so they know taking those on. And it's just very, and it's just kind of this fascinating way to kind of pass this along. And this is such a rich resource. I mean, I just always tell people, just pick up this book and you can do an adult ed course.
Mm-hmm. And that's keeping with our baptismal promise as people of a congregation. You know, we'll put in your hands the scripture and the hymnal.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of sort of the value of knowing your own songs or knowing the songs of your people, someone said to me a while ago that how it sort of stinks that we can't really sing together unless we have something in our hands, you know, and that maybe something that the church, just how good it is to know things so well that you don't need to hold them,
yeah.
and that by giving that as a gift, that's a way to do that. He said when Mary like found out that she had conceived, she didn't have to go find the green book to sing about it. Truly, you know. So to have songs that are just like a part of who you are.
But she knew the history, though. So, but Mary knew the history.
Right. So it came out.
Yeah.
Came out of her.
Right.
Here.
Right.
Yeah.
And because what's the connection with Hannah? Wasn't there the connection with Hannah?
Yeah.
Hannah's song.
So knew that previous tradition.
Right, exactly.
Knew that previous
the
tradition.
Song, right.
The marriage. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of that previous tradition.
But we need to hand it down, probably physically, and we need to sing it. We did not have children when we came to our congregation. Children did not worship and praise because there were very few children. They were having Sunday school, and I finally said, I will not be a pastor at a church where children are not in worship. Well, they'll be bored. I said, there's worse things than boredom. You know, really, come on. And we are growing illiterate children. If they don't get this in their bones as children, they cannot get it in their bones as adults in the same way. It's just a much different effort. And we are really doing a disservice. We're going to change it, yeah. So let's sing this, Drawn to the Light, and again, listen to the images and think of how this could be sung. This could be done with guitars, all kinds of stuff.
Baptism is the one bath that makes us dirty. And his point was that it's a washing that unites us with the stuff of the world.
Yep.
And it breaks down kind of the walls between the insiders and outsiders, or it unites us breaks down walls and makes us dirty in the stuff of the world. In a wonderful way.
Well, Martin talks about when we baptize the child, we should dump them in with their beautiful gown and bring them out, and they should look ugly. They should be just all crumpled.
Yeah.
But we keep it so beautiful and antiseptic, just like funerals now, you know? We don't even allow people to touch the dirt to put on the... So how do we bring back the mud? That's maybe an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah.
Once when I preached on the baptism of Jesus at a previous church we went to in Chicago, we had had 5 infants baptized that year. And so I wrote a personal note to each of them to make sure they come, and then I invited them up to the front during the sermon. And we talked about how important it was for they were baptized into our community, how important it was for the community to raise them.
What did you say your children do? Something about they march around and look for the wise men or something.
Oh, yeah, on Epiphany,
yes,
they have what's called the walk for the Magi, and they all go out as a group and they go around the neighborhood, and then there's people dressed up as the 3 kings and maybe some other individuals, and they meet them and invite them back to the church for food.
And what do they do? Oh, they don't go knock on doors. They just walk.
No, they just walk, but
okay.
They're out there.
A little parade, okay.
In the
people that are out there are part of the staff.
Yeah.
They are dressed in.
But, you know, people see them walking around and wonder what's going on.
But if it's not raining.
It sounds rather magical, doesn't it? From a child's point of view.
Yeah.
You know, the baptism of Jesus, that starts early, that's in January, and maybe people are back from their Christmas breaks, you know, maybe not. That's usually, you know, a 7th or 8th or 9th or something. It's a big Sunday, and you hate to have people miss it. But that could really be the theme that launches that flow. It'd be fun to think about mud, mud, how that could work. How would you get the message of being sent out to all nations, or all nations being part of this, you know, the gospel is being sent to the Gentiles and then beyond, and it's, you know, the ripples get, if we think of water, the ripples keep growing and growing.
You want to make mud from dirt from the various continents in a tub. That's a children's program.
Oh.
And then you'd have your mud. And then you fill it up with water and baptize
it. Yeah.
Baptized in mud.
Maybe only one part of that idea. That's a way to bring the nations.
The sense of in the Epiphany of the light shining into the world to the Gentiles, etc. Makes me think of we celebrate Pentecost often with some multi-language readings.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you can do that in Epiphany.
Absolutely.
That'd be neat.
Absolutely. Even more so. Absolutely. We kind of reserve it for that one time, and it's such a good thing. Why do we forget? Absolutely. Some churches, there's a church in St. Paul that has almost all the flags of the nations in their sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
They don't just have the American flag, but they have all the flags. So could you somehow bring in all the flags? That would work. Or have a processional with all the flags?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to pass this out. I just brought one service. We put together what's called, we created our own liturgy from different music from all over the world, and we put it in different languages, and we invite people to sing in whatever language they want to. We call it Table of Mercy. And we put in the gutters the margin, you call the gutter, the liturgical gutter. More and more churches are doing it this way. It's really nice. It's a nice way to teach, put teaching things on it. But we have from Palestine and from Sweden and from the East and Sweden, from all over. And we invite people to sing in that language. So this would be a setting, and we just stole this from wherever we could find it. We put it together, we took some time to get the flow that worked, and then we have copyright permission to do this. But it's another example of really bringing in the globe and into your space.
I just remember something that we had done during Epiphany. People were invited to bring, like, objects that... were that represented God being revealed to them, mm-hmm. and they were like sort of they sort of gathered as the weeks went on in the front of the sanctuary, and it's a really cool thing that people could go up afterwards and sort of see or read or whatever it would be. And sort of combined with that, I think we talked about this a little bit last time, but there was also an icon that like was continually worked on throughout the season, so that like the idea of God being, you know, revealed or anyway, it like came to completion then on Transfiguration, and it was all lit up. And,
it would be a time for people out in the field, whatever that might be, biologists, diaper changers, you know, whatever, out in the field to tell stories. You know, maybe instead of a sermon or as instead of one of the lessons, someone tells a story of a sign of God out in the field where they are working. You know, how do we lift up the priesthood of all believers, too? It's really...
We had a very gifted musician. She wrote a liturgy called One World Rising that we often use during Epiphany, and it's got, you know, it's got that holy, holy, holy we sang, the samba, Swedish samba, and the Guatemalan hymn, and a Korean hymn, and a hallelujah is an Indian chant, and so it's very similar to this idea.
What do you call these? The
gutter. The gutter.
That's a good idea.
So, you know, worship is not about education, per se, and worship isn't evangelism. Worship is to worship God. We bring our whole selves and worship God. But there is an opportunity to educate, if done well, to teach about Epiphany. And we have to be redundant. We just have to keep at it, right? We have to keep at it. So what are the creative ways for us to teach and invite people into this wonderful season? Every season invites us to try out different things, you know, and they're all aspects of what we need as human beings. You know, we need light. We need to be sent out. We need to think beyond ourselves. You know, we need to stretch ourselves. We need to broaden our world. We need to broaden our periphery, our viewfinder. You know, each season of a church year does something really powerful or asks of us something really powerful that we don't want to miss. One last thing, the Transfiguration. What do we do with that? Okay, that leads us into around the mountain. Jesus is glorified, and the disciples want to build, you know, three cool little, you know, they want to take a Polaroid and keep this and put it in their back pocket and save it. But they got to go back down. What do we do with Transfiguration?
Well, part of it is not only are you going down, but you're starting toward Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And that's very powerful. Can be a very powerful metaphor in a lot of different ways, and you can use that.
Yes.
Back then, I thought, you know, first in our church we have a freestanding altar, and getting at least a bunch of people to march around it to climb the mountain.
Yeah.
And then,
Well, your start toward Jerusalem makes me think of. We have parishioners active, a lot of health and wellness stuff going on. And there was a very popular march to Jerusalem, not having to do with Transfiguration, but if it were started at that point, I could see the connection with Transfiguration. And everybody who wanted to, and there's a whole pile of people, kept track of how far they walked each week.
Oh, yeah.
And then we had a chart up there. And we got to Jerusalem way before we were supposed to, because everybody was having so much fun. So it was just a... it involved a lot of ownership of getting to Jerusalem, calling attention to health and wellness, and I can see it tying into that part.
Yeah. We also have Mardi Gras, you know, which comes before, that comes right before Ash Wednesday. But it does come pretty close, and we have the chance to really have a big party, too. Celebrate before we kind of climb down and do some of that hard work. Tie that in somehow. We go from glory, dazzling white, back down to the mud, maybe. Well, I want to be mindful. Are you willing to sing one more hymn?
Sure.
This is written by John Bell, who lives and works. He's a pastor from Scotland, and he's been a part of the Iona community.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been to the Iona community twice. If you can ever go there and experience their worship, which the language is really grounded in the language of factory and the material world and stone and salt and water, and it's just really wonderful worship. And I steal a lot of their stuff. I just steal stuff that I mine. I think that's okay when it's worship. It's okay. But we're going to sing, Will You Come and Follow Me, the summons. Do you know that? Mm-hmm. Okay. This is just another great hymn. And it is number 798. 798. We can think of this with Jonah, not wanting to follow, Samuel, not wanting to follow, calling us out. Thank you very much for coming and thinking about Epiphany. Tomorrow we're on.